Hey guys, new podcast today here at CycloneFanatic.com. It's going to be a popular one. We've been doing our season preview podcasts and, you know, all of our fall camp coverage. Rob Gray and Jared Stansberry are doing a great job up there. And I keep having people say, hey, we need to get Ben Bruns on. Can you guys get Ben Bruns on? So I sent the text. He got back to me within like 2 minutes. And here we go. Ben Bruns. What's up, my man?
Hey, all you got to do is ask. You know,
it's good to have you.
Thanks. I don't get the opportunity to be in front of the Cyclone Fanatic fan base much. And this is awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no. Well, I like having you on, man, just because I feel stupid analyzing the offensive line because I feel like there's just so much going on there that a guy like me, no matter how much football I watch, I can't grasp what it's actually like. I can't grasp everything that is going into that position group. I feel like the only way I can like truly analyze an offensive line is when a guy gets beat, I can see it. And that's not fair a lot of times. I mean, I find myself doing that as a Minnesota Vikings fan, crushing Matt Khalil. I can't tell you how many times I drove back on Sundays and just cussed out Matt Khalil to my wife last year. And it's like, well, I mean, and I think it's fair to a degree, but he's also doing a lot of things right, probably, that I have no clue, because the only time it stands out to me is when that guy gets beat.
Well, and so the piece that a lot of people miss is the fact that it may not be that guy that you see on the ground, you know, scrambling to try and get into position mm-hmm. that was the one that screwed up. It may have been his buddy next to him that sold him out because he didn't stay long enough on a block, or it may have been something that they didn't pick up right with a blitz pickup, or and so a guy's just trying to cover for somebody else. And so it starts with being mentally sharp, knowing how to take the defense on. And, you know, there's a lot that's been made of the experience of this group on the offensive line. It's a huge deal. When you have to start and play as a freshman or a sophomore, the game is so fast. And the only way that it slows down is for you to have experience where you're not thinking anymore about what's the play and what's my footwork. You're thinking about, I know the play, the footwork's automatic, I know where to put my hands, mm-hmm. all that stuff. What could hurt me? Where's the defense going to go? How are they going to react? And what's the first thing that I need to look for as I step up to the line and get ready to do this play? Then the game slows down. But it's not until that point. And finally, we have a group of guys that have enough experience mm-hmm. to be able to put their hands down on the ground and know what's coming and be able to anticipate it better.
Let's start at the center position, because I think if you look at Iowa State's depth chart on the offensive line, even coming into the season, it was probably the largest concern. And then you lose Patrick Scoggins, like your number two. It's eerie how that happened, though, Ben. 2 years in a row, I mean, Iowa State lost Ben Loth on day one last year. They lost Scoggins on day five this year. And we have no idea, really. I mean, he was a JUCO. We have no idea how that guy would have progressed. But I guess my question is, Jamison Locke listed as number one. You know, I'm knocking on wood right now. Hopefully nothing happens to Jamison. But if it would, like, how difficult or what do you think they do with that backup center spot? How difficult is it for a guy who's lined up at guard for 3 years to move over? Because we've seen it with Ben Lamach did it. There's a lot of examples in the Paul Rhodes era of guys who have done that. Jamison Locke is there.
And Ben Lamach did it really successfully, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, Jamison Locke has done it. Oni Emoli has done it. To me, the guy that's the most natural center of anybody on the football team is Oni. You know, Jamison's in that position, and I think that's a good thing, but he's not a natural center. Center is weird because you're so much further out, closer to the line of scrimmage than everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, the guards get a chance to set back at least to your shoulder pad, and in a lot of cases back further than that. Tackles, same thing. Mm-hmm. And in the spread game, you see tackles set way, way back, right? So they've got all this room and all this space to work with. a center has no space to work with. If that nose guard is right on top of you, and in most schemes these days, defending the spread, they are. They're either in a backside shade, so they're shaded away from the strength of the formation, which makes it really hard for you to get up to a linebacker. And it also makes it hard on the backside guard, the guy who's coming to try and take over in a run combination. So that's why you see a lot of teams that cover the center up. And when you're covered up as a center, which means you've got a defensive tackle right on you, nose guard, your hips have to be really, really good. You know, there were parts of my background as a wrestler that I didn't like about how I played, but there were parts of my background as a wrestler that made it really good when I played center because I could open my hip up quickly and get my helmet across somebody's face that's really super close to me. And a guy like Jameson, who's as tall as he is, that's hard to do. You don't generally see – typically a center is the shortest guy in the offensive line. You see it in the NFL. You see it in college football. And there's a reason. You know, you want to be somebody who can is compact enough to get your head across a defender so that you can stop their penetration, because you don't do it with your hands and you barely do it with your feet because you're so close together. You start with putting your head in the right place on that guy, and it takes a really quick first step.
Well, that'll be – hopefully we don't have too big of a problem with the center spot. Hopefully they don't get down to the backup.
Yeah, right. But so the question of depth, I think, is an okay one. I think there's enough there between Oney moving over.
Okay.
You know, we'll see. It's a lot for Nick Seavers to bite off, right?
I mean, that's a huge chunk. I feel like if you put with all that experience and then you throw him in, that's a weak link. And I don't even know anything about the kid. Maybe that's not fair, but
sure.
Just comparing to the experience the rest of these guys have, to me, that would stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, and maybe you have another option somewhere too, a guy who's more ready. Maybe, you know, but I played in that situation.
Yeah.
Ben Baudette played in that situation. You know, Tom Farniak played in that situation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Guys have done it for years and years, and that hasn't necessarily translated to great offensive lines. But in certain cases, around this time of guys' careers, I mean, this is, if there aren't injuries here, this could be a really good unit, significantly better than years past. I'm not ready to say that they're going to be as good as I thought they were going to be 2 years ago, because last season didn't come together. But I thought this was the year that Iowa State's offensive line could be really, really good, and we'll see.
No, let me be the contrarian here, because I know a lot of people, the skeptics out there listening, are probably thinking that's a lot of starts that these guys have, but it's also a lot of losses.
Yep.
Why are you confident that this group will turn it around? Because when you look at the rest of Iowa State's offense, sans maybe the running back position, I mean, there's a ton of experience and talent across the board. However, the experience probably isn't as important at running back as it is at other positions. Why are you confident in this group?
I think mentality remains to be seen, right? Mm-hmm. Are they nasty enough to really be an asset for Iowa State? That's a key component of it. You have got to be a little mean, and it doesn't have to be every guy, but it has to be a couple guys. But Wendell Taiesi's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so those elements exist. Jake Campos can be that guy. Great kid, but when he gets upset, he gets after it. So you start to look at the components of the thing and you say, okay, Campos, that's a legitimate talent. He can play. He took Sean Oakman in the second half of the Baylor game last year, and maybe Oakman was a little bit disinterested, but Jake Campos owned Oakman in the second half of that game last year. It shocked me like crazy. And probably Oakman, too, to the point where he was just like, get me out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't play most of the fourth quarter. Why would he, right?
Yeah.
But you know, then you look at guard. You got Oney Emole and Wendell Taiesi. Wendell Taiesi is the kind of guard that can move somebody out of the hole, which is not what we've had in when Daniel Burton was hurt. He lost that ability. You look at the other side, Daniel Burton can move somebody out of the hole when he is healthy. And if he is, I'll tell you what, people, if you don't know how much Daniel Burton played through last year, you need to understand that that guy, his kneecap would slide off of the front of his knee, and he'd slide it back in place and go play some more. Craziness. And he played through it, but he clearly not at his best.
Yeah, and he was one of the guys who the casual fan would think was like the healthiest guy on the line.
Yeah, and totally not true. And it happened early in the year. So, you know, then you go to Brock Daigle and you say, okay, here's a guy who's accountable, he's smart, he's tough, he's long, he has what it takes to keep guys at bay. Is he going to dominate people? Probably not, but I think he's going to have a really nice senior season. So then you go back to center and you say, all right, what did we lose when Tom Farniak walked out the door? We lost a tough guy. We lost a really experienced guy. We lost a strong guy. We lost a guy who could dominate in one-on-one situations if his pads were on the defender the whole time. But the other thing that I observed when I watched Tom play was that he moved at a faster speed than the two guards that were playing beside him. And whenever that happens, whenever there's not unity in that in those three, holes start to open up. Holes that can be run through by weak side linebackers, holes that are too hard for a backside guard to cut off and stop the penetration through.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were some things that Tom did really, really well. I'm not convinced that he made the two guards beside him better, which was needed when those guys were less experienced and less physical. There were times where he did it really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But he just naturally was Scott Stevenson was a guy back in the day who had that same sort of motor that sometimes opened up a gap. You watch Pat Onofa play. Pat played at the same speed as the guards, and everybody moved together. I felt like when I played, it was like that. Zach Butler, when he played, it was like that. The three guys were moving in unison. Vander Sanden, similar kind of thing. So, you know, on those offensive lines that have been really successful in the past, the center was able to unify himself with the guards. If Jamison Lault can do that, this can be a really good run blocking unit.
Let's say that it is. Let's think glass half full and be positive Cyclones here a couple weeks before the season. Sam Richardson gets a lot of press for his 0-15 record as a starting quarterback in the Big 12. Is that fair? Just to pin, because you kind of are what you are with your record, but I think most educated fans and analysts know that, I mean, the 15 losses are not, you can't just pin that on one guy, realistically. Well, how do you analyze that? Because there was recently, I'll just go, the Des Moines Register's headline was 0-15. Like, that was a giant headline in reference to Sam Richardson. Is that fair?
It's not fair. Our system is one that relies on the quarterback to win. Simple as that. You know, you'd like to say it was something else, but that's what it is. So let's talk about a couple situations where it's totally unfair. Games on the line, pressure situation, got to get a drive together to score and win. A couple times last year in that situation against opponents that were good football teams. You run the clock out, you pick up a first down, you do this or you do that, you beat K-State. You run the clock out, you pick up a first down, you beat Texas.
Yeah.
Right? So
good teams.
Good teams. And in those scenarios, what I watch is who steps up and makes a great play and who doesn't. And Iowa State shrunk in those moments last year. And it wasn't Sam Richardson per se. It was every guy out there. And when that's the case, so a couple specific examples, huge pressure, right? Huge pressure right off the snap into Sam's grill, and you got no choice, nothing you can do with the ball, right? That's on the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the tackles. That's on the guards. That's on the center to protect in that moment better than they have all game. And maybe the guy across from him just was better, right? That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That is what it is. But you can't put that pressure and the decision making in that moment on Sam Richardson because he never had a shot. Give the guy a shot. I like my chances. I'll take him. Iowa State needs to make Sam Richardson more of a game manager by the way everyone else plays and less of the critical guy in that heat of the battle, that final moment where it's all on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not that guy. He's the guy that can manage a game for you and win it. But other people have to step up, and it comes back to accountability, and that's why I like what this team's done in the offseason so much.
Well, and that brings right into where I wanted to go with this, is this culture change that we keep hearing about. And I've even noticed it, you know, just being around the guys at after camp, and I mean, it just seems like there's a little more pep in everybody's step from Coach Rhodes to all the way down. The one thing that concerns me is this, maybe this is just a stupid sportscaster cliche and you can put me in my place, but the whole learning how to win thing. They've won 5 games in 2 years. So to me, it's very encouraging to see what on paper is the 5 easiest games right off the bat, but it's also hard for me to believe that this group that has lost so much can just rattle off 5 wins in a row.
I'm with you. No, it's fair. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, when we were in this same moment under Coach McCarney for 4 of my 5 years, we were in that moment of it seems like in the worst possible moment, everything that can go wrong does go wrong, right? We knew that we were doing the right things. We knew that we were putting in the work that it took to get better. We knew that we didn't have all the parts and pieces at the time. You know, it's funny, I watched the 1996 season, and I'm sorry for all the fanatics who weren't born then.
Oh, we got some who were around.
All right.
Yeah, good, they were around.
Good, like
yeah.
3 of you.
Bloom's disciples. That's who those guys are. That's the Bloom crowd.
I like it. I like it. So, you know, that was the season that Troy Davis, you know, was back and went for 2,000 yards again for the second time. There were weapons at wide receiver. There was a quarterback who was competent and could make enough plays, and the defense just couldn't stop anybody. And we knew at that point that there were some cogs missing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were some guys on that defense that were great players. They just weren't everywhere.
Yeah.
And it took until 2000 to get there. And it's really frustrating. I'll tell you, it is way frustrating when you do everything you can to do it the right way and you don't get good results. These football teams the last couple of years have been fragile, mentally fragile. And they know it. And they're upset about it. The problem is you don't know whether or not you can overcome it until you're in that situation again.
Mm-hmm.
And the first chance to be in that situation is with bullets flying against you and I, who, by the way, is a very good, capable ball club that hates your guts and has put guys in the NFL. You know, there's good players there and guys that have spent time developing themselves. So the true test will be how unified are you in the fourth quarter against you and I? The difference, in my opinion, of where this team is now versus where they were even over the course of from Gene Chizik's time to today, and we talked about this offline a little bit, Chris, is the strength and conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of running they've done and how they've done the running to enhance and understand who is accountable. In the course of the last 6 years, Iowa State did what a lot of schools have done in terms of strength and conditioning. It was all speed and power, speed and power. But that doesn't tell you who's accountable in the fourth quarter. And everybody wants to point the finger at Coach Rhodes about the culture of a team. But the reality is the culture of a team, who spends the most time with those guys?
The strength and conditioning staff, right?
That's a fact.
Yeah.
They know stuff that the head coach could never know because they're just there all the time. And they're the ones that help set the culture of excellence. I have great respect for the strength and conditioning coaches that have come before, but the football team had not run the way they've run this summer since Matt McGettigan left. And this was a lot by CO's direction, but a lot by Coach Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we want to know who's accountable. We want to put people through that sort of gut-wrenching, we're running as a group, and if you don't make your time, everybody runs it again. Over and over and over again. If somebody's late for a workout, the whole group goes out. And what are they going to do? They're going to do an air raid. An air raid, you run 5 yards and you do an up down all the way down the field, all the way back before you even start the workout. So when guys are parked out in front of other guys' houses to make sure that they get up and get to the workout on time, that's different. That's accountability. That's teamwork. And when everybody alludes to what that special thing is that's sort of been happening, that's the sort of stuff they're talking about. And it's the kind of thing that pays dividends in the fourth quarter against you and I.
Do you have any examples from the McCarney era when you played? I mean, did you guys do stuff like that to keep each other accountable?
Absolutely. And you know, people talk about fights at practice as a bad thing. Not in my world.
Yeah.
You know, and when I first got there, I mean, you know, nice kid from small town Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, what is this? But when somebody disrespected a member of your unit, you were going to go figure out how to make that different. And I saw guys throw down or almost throw down on a strength and conditioning workout in the summer because somebody wasn't doing what they were supposed to do. And I had strong feelings about those things, as did other of my teammates, and we made them known. And that's where accountability really starts to be enhanced. A coach can tell you all they want. And it's the same thing in anybody's business, anybody's work life. You know, the boss can tell you all he wants, this or that. But the reality is what your peers say matters. And I think that's where this football team is right now.
Speaking of that culture, let's just go to the other side of the football. And last year, I mean, this Robbie Garcia started the first game in the middle up front on defense last year. He's third string right now. Well, one of the reasons he had to start was because of David Irving. He had the Visha thing and some other stuff, but Rodney Coe was let go of the team. Brandon Jensen had previously quit the team, comes back, and he was just behind the whole time, it seemed like. And he had some injuries. I know he was fighting. But they didn't have depth going into the year, and then you get a guy like Robbie Garcia gets worn down, and then by the end of the year, I mean, it's just a utter disaster. Right now, I'm cautiously optimistic about this defensive line because I'm looking at it, and instead of asking who's going to play, I'm asking the questions, who's going to sit? Because yeah. I think they actually, I don't know how good a lot of these guys are, but I feel like they have bodies. If it's DeMond Tucker, if it's Bobby Leith coming in, I like what they have at defensive end. I think Trent Taylor and Dale Pearson are both Big 12 players at this point. So am I cool me off, man, because I'm feeling pretty good about this group. I really am.
Well, you know, when Devlin Cousin is listed as number two on your depth chart, that guy came in and played some of the toughest ball last year. He was the guy against Kansas that was out there battling his butt off when everybody else seemed to be in a trance. And that told me a lot about him because he was hurt. And he played the whole game. I mean, he was hurt bad. And he played well. So when he's a two, you know that it's a whole different situation from a year ago. And Devlin will play a ton in the coming year and have a huge impact. But this is there are a lot more bullets in the gun than there were a year ago at that spot. And really across the front, which now allows your linebackers to run and make plays because you've got a linebacking core, particularly last year, that was undersized and inexperienced.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be hard to stop the run in those situations when the D-line can't keep guys off the linebackers and the linebackers can't shed blockers either. So totally different scenario this year coming into the season. And I think the other thing is, I believe we're going to see an exceptionally well-conditioned ball club. And so those things all coupled together allows you to have a much more high-performing defense in the event the offense isn't successful. But I still say everything that we saw last year, that offense had to move the chains. They had to get first downs. That's what's going to win games for us this year. Offense has to move the chains, get first downs. Simple as that.
So I got into a conversation on my radio show with Ross and Andrew, who are both openly Hawk fans. And a lot of reports coming out of Iowa City in their scrimmage over the weekend was that their offense was just abysmal. It couldn't move the ball on their defense, et cetera. And I feel like over the years of doing the Iowa State thing, I feel like you want reports of the offense succeeding in fall camp. Is there, how do you read that? Because it sounds like I heard that Richardson threw 70 passes on Saturday and not one interception. To me, it's very encouraging. And by all means, if I look at this depth chart on paper, sure, I'm excited about the defense. I think the defense is going to be night and day better than it was a year ago, but I still, looking at this and stacking it up against other rosters in the Big 12, I totally agree with you. This offense is what's going to have to win games. The defense, I think, will be good enough to not necessarily lose them, but they're going to have to score. How much should we be watching? Like, what should we be watching for out of fall camp as far as these reports go?
You know, as an offensive player, you wanted to win every day, every time you went out there, right? So I wasn't really sure how good Ryan Harklaw was,
mm-hmm.
who I played against every day for 4 years, until we put our hand down on the ground and played against that first opponent. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've both been working hard, right? But I don't know for sure what he's got versus what that guy across from me has that's wearing a different color jersey. And so I don't put too much in good or bad in those scenarios, because what really matters is how do guys perform when the game is on the line? And everybody thinks about the game being on the line at the last minute. It's not. The game is on the line midway through the first quarter. The game is on the line some point in the second. The game is on the line at any time when people start getting a little bored. There are lulls in the game that happen in every game, mm-hmm. at every level. And the teams that seize those moments and win those moments and pull themselves out of that doldrum when neither team has any momentum, you're winning more moments, and those moments add up to, at the end, you're positioned way better. Whether you're up big or whether you're hanging in there with somebody you shouldn't be or whatever, you're going to be in a good position at the end of the game if you've made the most of all those moments. You know, at Valley, we had a lot of opportunity where first quarter comes, you get a good lead. Second quarter comes, you got a great lead. Midway through the third quarter, what are you doing? You know, it's so easy in those moments to pull off the accelerator.
Is that what happened to North Dakota State last year?
I believe it is. I believe it is. And North Dakota State was a team that was always going to try and find a way to seize those moments. They've done it for years now. That's where winning and losing, you know, you talk about knowing how to win.
Mm-hmm.
It really translates into understanding those moments and making the best of them over and over and over again. And that's not hard to do. You just have to be mindful of it. You have to understand it, and you have to have prepared for it. That's why I don't believe that it's so hard to go from 4-8 to 9-3 and win a bowl game. You know,
that's refreshing. That's good to hear.
So I think that this football team, but you gotta beat UNI. You gotta win those moments against UNI. If you do that, the rest of the season is sort of yours to capture each moment.
I feel like a fast start to the season is just so critical, though, just because for a guy like Sam, for instance, I mean, he is 0-15 as a starter. Like, I personally, I get irritated when people just single-handedly pin that on him, but it is a fact. That's his record as a starter. And I feel like, let's just say, hypothetically, if he were to go out and throw two interceptions in his first two series, no matter how good of a leader he's been, and I noticed it, man, down in Dallas, like, he is a different guy this fall to me. He seems different. He's carrying himself differently, like what I'm hearing. but it'd be easy to let that creep back in, right? So, I mean, how important is not only beating UNI, but looking good while doing it, not squeaking past 14-13 or just get the win? Is that
get
where
the
you're
win. Get the win. Okay. Really. Yeah. I've been waiting for an Iowa State team, and I feel like there should be all this pent-up rage and just anger and hunger and hatred for how the last few seasons have gone, for them to just club somebody. But clearly not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look at the schedule last year. Who was it going to be? You know, nobody sets up well in that description. Same thing this year, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you're playing good ball clubs week in and week out. Can Iowa State just be vicious in those moments where the game gets decided? And they happen in the first quarter, and they happen in the second quarter. And so if you throw two picks to start the game, that's just the first two series. What about the fifth series,
mm-hmm.
when, you know, you've battled back a little bit, but you're in a third and six, and you've got to make a play to get your defense off the field that was just out there for a long time? That's the moment that Iowa State has to win. And it's not just Sam Richardson that has to do it. It's every guy.
The Richardson moment I keep going back to, where I know he's got it, is at Iowa last year, and then Texas. I mean, they were down, a couple touchdowns early on, and that was – see, what I keep thinking about, and this is what I talk with Sam about, if somehow they can hone that,
yeah.
that offense in, and the Toledo one too, they're pretty good against Toledo.
Yeah.
If somehow they can consistently be that group, Ben, I think that we're going to be – going somewhere warm. I think they'll go to a bowl game if that offense can just somehow grasp that.
I think that's true. I also think that they have to find a way, and you've heard Mark Mangino talk about it over and over and over again, to grind it out on the ground. When you need a first down, you get a first down, and you get it running the ball. And that's not – even in those scenarios, that wasn't what we were doing. We were slinging it around and moving mm-hmm. the football quickly – and everything was clicking. And by the way, Sam Richardson had a touchdown winning drive at the end of that Texas game.
Mm-hmm.
He just got one upped.
Yeah.
You know, so you can say what you want about where the moxie is and where the, you know, he doesn't fold up and go into a shell. He doesn't. I've never seen it, even when things have been bad. So that encourages me. And I see what you see, Chris. Mangino is a smart, smart guy. He knows that in those moments, well, look at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Come on. You know, there's one of those moments.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, you're a little emotional right here.
I still feel like we won that football game. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. That's how I feel about Texas the last 2 years, really.
So, you know, in those situations, can you close the deal running the football? And we'll see. We'll see if this offensive line can do it. And to me, the onus is on them. This season is on that group.
So you're not concerned if the offensive line plays to its potential. You're not concerned about the young inexperience at running back?
I'm not, unless they're putting the ball on the ground. You know, that's the only thing that those guys could do that would be of huge detriment to Iowa State this year. If they can squeeze the rock, it's going to be okay. Because they're talented enough to make plays. You can play as a running back early in your career. The protections aren't that complicated, but they have to know them,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's be mentally sharp and squeeze the football.
Guess the one thing here to kind of wrap this up, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about the improved Jack Trice Stadium. The thing with me that does keep me up at night, and I know I'm sick, but I just care so damn much. And, like, I remember there was a lot of times in the McCarney years where the Big 12 North existed, and you had the four non-conference games, where I feel like last year's team and the team before, where a lot of times that adversity would hit Iowa State, but the schedule would allow Iowa State to rebound.
Yeah.
And it's just not forgiving like that anymore. And there is a piece of me, and I know some fans listening right now, where it's just like, man, can we do this at this level? And I think we all know that it can happen, but how long does it take to get to that point? And that's part of me really is concerned for the Paul Rhodes hate crowd out there that does exist, because I don't think a lot of people understand the difference in what it is now and in 2005. I mean, the program has to keep going on the escalator, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
do you get the concern that I have there?
I think a couple things. One is Iowa State, and so if you want to look at the landscape of the league, or do you want to talk about the schedule itself?
Landscape of the league. All right. Mean, just with the nine conference games, it's just different now. It's a different world.
So the reason that I think it's so different, and obviously the schedule is one thing, but it's a whole other thing, the fact that Texas is just a good team. They're just a pretty good team. They're not a dominant force that held everybody else in check, right? Baylor was a cream puff in those days. And even when we were at our worst, we beat Baylor, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it was.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that, Fanatic?
I know.
Did you hear that?
It's crazy.
It's true. So
Baylor was they were the epitome of just a garbage college football program.
Not good.
10 years ago.
Yeah. So that tells you that something changed. One of the things that changed was that Mack Brown just was there a little bit too long at Texas, and the edge dropped off. And when the league started to break up and reform, it opened the door for teams like TCU that had that had talent, but it was second tier talent, to now all of a sudden start to get some of the guys that Texas was getting. Same thing for Baylor. You know, the door opened because now they're not really competing against A&M anymore in recruiting. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're competing for a different kind of kid than A&M wants to have for the most part. And we need Texas to be good. We need Oklahoma to be really good. We need those schools to squash the rest of the conference, to normalize things, to allow us to be able to fall more in line with the rest of the competitive landscape.
Need Bill Snyder to retire?
So we need something to happen to Bill Snyder. Sorry, Bill.
That's still incredible.
Is absolutely incredible. You know, you talk all the time about Baylor.
Yeah.
And Art Briles. Whatever, man. Baylor, great, right? But look how much talent they have in the backyard.
Yeah.
And basically no NCAA oversight, given the fact that they're a private institution. And they just tell people to go fly a kite when they ask for certain information, right? Like, no, sorry, we don't have to give you that. We're not going to.
There's no Freedom of Information Act.
Exactly.
At Baylor.
So, then you translate this to Kansas State, which is the Iowa State of Kansas, right?
Yeah.
And look what they do.
And they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Now, they've got a nice junior college base built up around them.
Correct.
But what he has done, and the fact that they got to be so competitive so fast after he came back,
that's what shocked me.
It's unbelievable. It's off the charts. It's the stuff of legend. If that guy's not the best college football coach that ever coached the game, come on.
I would agree with you.
Because
they were so terrible before
he
got there.
They were the worst team in the history of major college football, or one of the two, when he got there.
And I talk about eating crow. I'll never forget I wrote a blog when he came back, and I just killed it. I'm like, just an utter act of desperation, the stupidest hire. Man, props to Bill Snyder. I love that. He's right up there with Briles with me. What I love about Baylor is just how sexy the brand is.
Yeah, I guess, how did they do that so fast?
It is unbelievable, the Texas thing. I don't think it's fair, and I always try and preface this, I don't think it's fair to compare Iowa State to Baylor just because of the location and whatnot. But it is good for an Iowa State fan to look at what they're doing. It does give you hope.
I don't think it's fair to compare Baylor to Iowa State with regard to the fan base. Baylor's fan base is awful.
Yeah,
Iowa State's fan base is incredible. And so if you're listening to this and you're a fanatic, you need to understand that, you know, TCU and Baylor, what will be their undoing eventually when Texas gets good again is that they don't have fans in the stands. Iowa State does. That's a huge, huge difference.
You and Bloom tell me all the time when you guys go on these road trips, specifically TCU. I mean, they were playing for a shot in the playoff last year, and it was how many people were at that game?
If there were 20,000 there by the start of the second half, I'll be shocked. I'd be shocked.
Yeah. Could you imagine Jack Trice if Iowa State was playing? See, I think what's fun to think about, because I know it's going to happen at some point. Hopefully I'm alive. At some point, Iowa State's going to have this boom in football that we've seen recently in basketball. And I've seen our site grow, and I've watched the fan base just get so excited and pack Kansas City at the Power and Light District for the Big 12 tournament. Can you imagine a scenario if Iowa State is a 9 or 10 win football team?
Oh, it's just, it's lunacy. So here's the part that you have to do as a player. Okay, so let's spin this down to that level. You already, when you go and you read the daily, it's already all about you, mostly,
mm-hmm.
right? And so even in the bad days, there's something good that you've got there. And then the Register, if you do something good, it's somewhat about you. There is no pro sport to divert people's attention. So when you do have that moment of success, and I think this is a little bit of what plagued basketball, you all of a sudden start to think, yeah, this is easy. Nothing about winning at Iowa State is ever going to be easy in any sport ever. We are too disadvantaged from a population perspective, just demographics.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a neighbor that is in a highly competitive athletic situation. And we don't care too much for each other. And we don't have a lot of money, and everybody else does. And so I think a great part about Iowa State is that we appreciate those moments of greatness. If there's a 9 or 10 win football team, people are going to be going crazy. But you have to keep in mind as a player and as a fan, a little bit of levity, right? That's the part that makes me upset when I go to Baylor and they act entitled and you go down to Kansas State and they're uppity, you know, remembering where you came from is a powerful, powerful thing. And, I think there's, and by the way, not everybody at Baylor acts a fool.
No,
everybody
at
Kansas
it.
State is a jerk. I mean,
but they
there's
do
lots
off.
And lots of nice people.
Right? Yeah.
But you have to, having an edge comes from feeling like you're the underdog. That's what Kansas did so well, right? When Mark Mangino was the head coach at Kansas, what did they do? They played like vicious people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They did. And I think this Iowa State football team this season has a chance to play that way.
Well, you mentioned the fans. The fans are going to get the treat of something that we've all been looking forward to for – well, decades now. It's been talked about as the new end zone. You're obviously you have a lot to do with that. I'll be honest, it wasn't even close to being completed. When I walked onto the field for the spring game, I had goosebumps, man, because it was like bigger and greater than I ever thought it would be. I drove by there like a week ago. It's something special. It's something special, man. What? Tell us about the pride you have in what's going on here.
It's awesome. And, you know, I get to see the stuff that nobody else sees. I get to see Chris Jorgensen, who, you know, is a senior associate athletic director, and how good he is as a customer who's buying a construction project that is so meaningful to everybody involved. I get a chance to see Dean McCormick, who's the director of facilities and design and construction at Iowa State, be on the job site every day. These are things that don't happen in typical construction projects every day because the schedule demands it and because everybody understands how big of a deal it is. And then I get to see a project team with guys like Ben Bungie and Bob Anderson who just have things clicking on all cylinders. And I'll tell you, it's down to the minute details at this point. Next Monday, we're going to have a thing called a super flush. Do you know what a super flush is?
No, I don't. I do not know this.
Take a guess at what a super flush might be.
You're just going to all the toilets?
We're going to flush all the toilets. We need 220 people.
Seriously?
To flush all the toilets at once to simulate what it's like on game day at halftime.
Really? Just to make sure there's no like malfunctions, just to make sure sewage problem?
That it all works, right? There's enough water, there's enough sewer, there's enough everything.
Wow, I never would have thought of that.
Right? So it all has to work. And kudos to the team that I just mentioned, the architects and engineers involved, all the subcontractors, because that project, you know, it's unbelievable to have something of that significance done 20 months from the time that Jamie Pollard and the Rymans made it a go.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Normally, design takes almost that much time, and then you build it.
Yeah.
This is the whole enchilada. The thing that's interesting to me about the South End Zone, and I could conceptualize it in my head early on because I'd been around it enough and I'm in that industry, it doesn't look new.
It blends.
It doesn't look new. And so when you fanatics come into the stadium for the first time, you're going to feel like you're in a new stadium, not like, oh, there's an addition down there. And I think that's what's so fascinating about this, because I hope that we can couple some darn good football with what happened down there. Because if so, the energy level is just going to be exactly like you described it, Chris. Well, it'll be off the charts.
The biggest thing you've said this whole podcast that's resonated with me was your analysis of TCU and Baylor and the fan bases. And, man, I'm just – like, I'm thinking about how great Iowa State's fan base has been over the year, and now you're combining this. If you get some good football – I'm just thinking, man, I'm a positive guy by nature. I'm thinking, what if? Because recruits, I mean, Paul Rhodes says it all the time, the hardest part we have to do is get them on campus. Once we have them here, they're pretty easy to sell. I mean, you're a former player. You talk to these recruits all the time. What is this going to do?
You know, the last couple years, our recruiting classes have been successful in spite of the product on the field. And maybe in part because the product on the field wasn't very good, guys knew they could come in and have a chance to play. Good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Desmond Tucker type guys, right?
Yeah. DeMond Tucker.
Yep. Sorry.
Yep.
Who could come in and have an impact? It's now is where the rubber meets the road, and everybody knows it, right? That first game is as serious of a deal as there's been at any point. But I can't wait for it. And neither can the players and the coaches. And they know how big of a deal it is. They know how serious it is. They know the stakes, you know. And so do all the fans. So we don't have to dwell about that. We don't have to spend time thinking about that. All we have to do is show up and be in the moment. And if we show up and are in the moment over and over and over again, we're going to like what that moment's like, I think, more often than not.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to... just the Iowa Stater in me. Just don't you feel, do you feel a lot of pride in that though, Ben? Because I mean, just for years, this has been, even when Iowa State, like the real down years, I mean, people wanted to see that end zone be bowled in to feel more big time and all that. Do you feel a lot of pride just being able to have such a big part in it?
You know, my pride is I'm far enough away from the construction side at this point that my pride is what. Everybody involved in the program that cares about the program has invested to get to this moment. You know, if Jack Trice isn't sold out over and over and over again for a longer stretch than we've ever had, in my recollection, I've been around Iowa State football a long time now. This never happens.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even come close, you know? Maybe the idea of the gift is out there, but it doesn't really have legs. So, the fanatics that are coming into the stadium need to know that their commitment has mattered, right? And has there been frustration and pain along the way for all of us, coaches, players, administration, fans, everybody, right? But that win against Oklahoma State, and I wasn't there.
You were gone.
I wasn't there.
I forgot about that.
I was I was in West Des Moines, or I was in Cedar Falls.
You missed
Valley Tigers.
You missed the party up in the press box. Yeah. Walters and Heft and me and Bloom. I'm pretty sure that we were all like, it was like a four man just giant bear hug. I think Grummer got in there.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I believe that. Yeah,
you would have just knocked us all over. It's probably good that you weren't.
We'd have been out the window.
Yeah. Wow, I can't believe you weren't there that night.
Yeah, so
I forgot about that.
So that, you know, and then I go all the way back to 2004 when we miss a field goal at the end of the game to win the Big 12 North, right? And I've had some great moments and some horrible moments in life. I kid you not, that was probably the most horrible moment in my life when we missed that kick, because I knew how hard everyone had worked to get to that point and how much had been sacrificed to do it. So appreciate those moments when they're here. And I just hope we can make some this year. I'll tell you what, this coaching staff, you may or may not, everybody's got an opinion and everybody's entitled to their opinion. This coaching staff is a really good coaching staff. And I don't know that there's a better group to be coaching at Iowa State at this moment in time. So take that away. They can coach. So can they recruit? Well, the last couple of years say they can. Can they win? Paul Rhodes has proven that he can. But you have to start anew. You have to, you know, it's always what have you done for me lately? And I get it. And so that's why you and I is so important. They get that ball rolling, though, and this could be a fun season. I really hope that these guys do what they believe they can do.
That's a pretty good place to end it, I think.
All right.
Thanks for coming in, man. We appreciate it. I know that a lot of people will enjoy your insight on the Psych One Radio Network, and you've been keeping busy. How's your boy?
He's good. Tell everybody. He's good.
Yeah. What year is he eligible to play for the Cyclone?
It's still a ways away, Chris. Yeah, okay. We're about 12 years from any of that.
Oh, okay. Well, we're almost within a decade. We'll have another All-American center at that point. He's Ben Bruns. Listen to him all year. Does a terrific job doing the sideline reporting on the Cyclone Radio Network. We appreciate his time, as always. Hey, thank you guys for listening. We'll continue to have some of these kind of special edition podcast as we work toward the season opener on September 5th. So long, everybody.